ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
It is a truth universally acknowledged that on one's 250th birthday, there should be a celebration. I'm Claire Nichols, and on The Book Show, we're raising our teacups to Jane Austen.
Why Austen? What is it about her?
Authors Colm Tobin, Karen Joy Fowler, and more will explore why, in 2025, the Austen effect is bigger than ever.
That's quite incredible.
Search for The Book Show and look for Dear Jane wherever you get your podcasts, or hear it now on the ABC Listen app.
Australian government services are leaning on artificial intelligence in ways we've never seen before, with machines now helping shape decisions that affect people's essential supports. Human judgment is still meant to play a role, but biases in the system and the handling of sensitive data raise some serious concerns. How much can we really trust AI to get it right? This is your guide to the week in technology and culture. My name is Ray Johnston, and welcome to Download This Show on ABC Radio National. Joining me to discuss that and more are freelance tech journalist from Press Any Button, Alice Clark.
Howdy doody.
And ABC Radio Perth content director, but also games journo with ABC Arts, Gianfranco Di Giovanni. Hello, welcome.
Hiya from Perth.
And just a heads up, this next Roblox story does discuss child exploitation on the platform. So if that's not for you, skip ahead or go make a cuppa. Now, Roblox, the online playground where millions of players are building and chatting and exploring virtual worlds, says it will start rolling out age verification checks from early December. And this timing lines up very neatly with the federal government's social media ban for under 16s, which kicks in on December the 10th. Interestingly, Roblox itself isn't on the government's list of banned platforms for young users. So, Alice, can you take me through what aspects on Roblox will be age-gated?
So, not a lot, but some pretty important ones. So, chat and some experiences will be locked behind age gates. So, under nines, 9 to 15, 15 to 17, and then old people.
So anyone over 21, basically.
Pretty much. And age will be verified by uploading a selfie, which, as we've seen in the UK, is a really great idea in theory, as long as people don't have any photos of literally anybody else on hand.
This is quite famously becoming a technology that is used for age verification on a number of other platforms, but has some quite significant workarounds.
Yeah.
It can be quite flawed.
They have made it so that you can still talk to people outside your age range, say if you want to play with your cousin, by introducing a new thing called trusted connections, which you can only make if you know each other's phone number.
Oh, interesting.
And have them in your contacts list. And you have to upload your phone number and contacts list to Roblox, which I'm sure will be completely fine.
I'm seeing some potential issues down the track here.
Yeah.
So, Gianni, Roblox isn't on the list for the government's social media ban. Why is it doing this?
Because it could be, potentially. I think most companies that have anything to do with kids or really anything could be captured by this. And there seems to be an appetite from the eSafety Commissioner, Julian McGrath, to say, well, maybe that might be included. So it's kind of getting on the front foot. I actually think this is, at the moment, we're going to be the bit of the test bed. I know the UK have got something similar that's kind of in place at the moment as well. But I expect something like this will start to roll out across the rest of the world. Now, maybe not in the United States, because the Senate there are trying to haul Julian McGrath in front of their, you know, their questioning, because they think that she's going to be stifling free speech across the world with this particular policy. But yeah, I just think they're getting ahead of it because they don't want to have to be faced with regulation if they are shown to be actively trying to limit the interactions that the government's determined could be potentially harmful.
So do we know if this is in response to any instances of inappropriate behaviour on the platform at all? Laughs in gamer.
Roblox has had a really checkered past. Like, there is an entire Wikipedia page dedicated to these past issues that they've had. it is an inevitability on a platform where you have a lot of young people talking, like a lot of kids playing, and there's anonymity and they're away from their parents. Like, it's just something, which is terrible. So some of the examples were a kid was groomed and eventually kidnapped from her home in America. She was 13. One of the popular creators on the platform. So for people who don't know how Roblox works, it's basically a platform and people can make games on it. The old joke was that Roblox ran on child labor. And one of the successful creators made a like Sonic fan experience, and he was 24, and he then used his notoriety for that to sext with 12-year-olds. Oof. And generally, Roblox is quite well known amongst parents for not having great moderation and not doing a good job of keeping things like Public Bathroom Simulator away from 5-year-olds.
So in theory, this age gating that they're doing in chats is a positive thing to help protect people on the platform.
Yeah, I think in theory it is a positive thing. And particularly, I mean, in terms of the content that gets created and some of those experiences that Alice was sort of explaining there, those sort of things only work in retrospect once they've been reported, because the ease of building stuff in Roblox will really, like, you just build something, people can play it, and then it gets reported and potentially taken down. But for example, if there are conversations and stuff where younger children are being exposed to people who are acting in a dangerous way towards them, that will be restricted now. But, you know, if it is just as simple as uploading a photo or something like that, what's to stop someone getting a photo of a child and uploading that as their ID? That's what I'm really curious about, all these particular processes. And I think the absolute failing of this policy at an Australian level is the fact that we don't have some sort of global tokenized ID check system, which was proposed when Optus got hacked, that there was going to be like a MyGov ID or something like that, where you had a government ID issued to you. And when you logged into Roblox, Facebook, Discord, any of those particular websites, it'd almost be like when you log in with Facebook or log in with Google, and you basically just press the button and sort of verify. And you don't need to give out all of your information. Your ID just needs to say, hey, this person is over 18. Hey, this person is under 18. That's the only thing it needs to give them, and it's verified in terms of that. And the government, I think, has absolutely failed by not making sure that this particular process is in place before this got rolled out. I think it's a disaster in the making.
In theory, I agree with you. In practice, I think if we all had our online presences tied to our government ID, that's going to create a lot of problems in authoritarian countries like the US. If a woman posts that she had an abortion in Florida and it's tied to her government ID, that's not going to go well for her. I think tying our online presence to who we are in real life is a terrible idea as a blanket thing.
But are we not already doing that with this particular policy in a way? Because like now we're actually giving all these particular companies control over it and really pushing all that information directly into their pockets rather than kind of having it. And I understand exactly. There are many circumstances where people need to keep their identity secret online because they might be fleeing violence, or maybe they are unable to express who they really are and are at fear of retribution from family or all those sorts of things. But I just think that, like, we're just literally making piles and piles of information that's making it
very, very easy. This policy is terrible on every single level. What we actually need is more of a regulatory approach to algorithmic content and harsher or more expanded classification rules for things like Roblox. Were I president of the universe, algorithmic feeds like TikTok and Instagram would just be straight up banned. You would have it back in chronological order from people you follow and maybe have a discover page that is an option. Because I think most of the problems we're currently having are due to algorithmic feeds. I also think we need a lot more education. We need to, if the problem is the children these days have too much freedom, maybe the problem is we don't have enough third spaces for children to actually physically go to where they can make friends and do things and make mistakes. Parents don't seem to understand enough about social media or video games, so they're not jumping into these experiences with their kids so they can understand what's going on and know what conversations to have. We need to empower that more. But there's just, I think a lot of what Roblox is doing here sounds really, really good until you think about it.
So would you say, Alice, then that age verification technology being rolled out across Roblox, across a number of other platforms, even the ones that are doing it voluntarily, is in place of scrutinising their practices and moderation techniques and content on the platform? It's a bit of a band-aid to say, we're doing the right thing. We've got age verification. We don't need to look at anything else any deeper.
100%. All of this is, it's just to stop them from having to actually do anything that would make a substantive difference. Like, all of this is easy to get around. It is obvious to anybody who would want to get around it how you would get around it. The only thing that isn't obvious to get around, admittedly, is their trusted connections. I think that is, in theory, a good idea. Again, until you think about it too hard and realize that if what they're trying to do is stop children being exploited and abused, you then need to remember that generally the person who's going to exploit or abuse children and adults is somebody that they know.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, given a lot of these abusers tend to be soccer coaches or youth pastors who would have all the parents' phone numbers and all the kids' phone numbers and would be in everyone's contact books. And now you've just made it so that it's very easy for them to friend the child and be trusted on both sides and have fun in this anonymous world with this person you trust and absolutely no checks and balances. That seems fine.
It absolutely does seem like a very simple solution for a very complex problem that won't be able to cover all of the gaps. And I'm wondering, one of the things that I'm not hearing come up in the conversation about the social media ban is the fact that it is kind of taking the role from parents. It is taking the onus on parents to check up on and make sure that their children aren't interacting in spaces that they shouldn't be online and just putting it in the hands of the government instead. And that feels easy for parents to be able to say, well, I don't need to worry about this anymore. Gianni, are you seeing that as well?
Oh, look, I think there's an aspect of it, but I also think because, you know, when I work in local radio, we just get inundated with parents who are just kind of at their wit's end. They can't really deal with the level of onslaught of information or all those sorts of things. And so really, I think this is a policy that's designed to kind of at least slow that down a tiny little bit for those people who are kind of almost drowning trying to make that work. And so I think, you know, there needs to be some sort of involvement from parents. Of course, we can't just say, all right, just go off down to the, you know, wherever and not pay any attention to where the kids are being and what spaces they're interacting with and all of those sorts of things. But it's really hard. We do this job all the time and it's really hard to kind of keep across everything that happens and all the changes that happen all the time. And if you are someone who has like a different job that's not involved with that sort of thing, it is a real challenge. So I can understand the intention as to why they've sort of put this thing in place. I think parents usually, on the whole, will mostly be pretty involved in their kids' lives if we take it at an average sort of stake. But yeah, it's a hard problem to solve and I'm not 100% sure that this is the solution, but yeah.
This is what you do when the problem is too hard and you want to make voters happy and you just want to go, yeah, look, we've done something, but this is easier than doing the hard thing. And it's going to mean that they don't actually do the hard thing, possibly ever, or at least for a while. And it's just really disappointing to see all of this time and political capital wasted on something that is not really going to make a substantial difference.
Gianni, looking at these platforms, you're increasingly asking for information for age verification to be able to access them. Would you say this is the beginning of the end for anonymity on the internet?
Maybe. I mean, who really knows? I mean, the thing is, I think it's really tricky with these days with the amount of information that's gathered on us just by default using any of these platforms to really be truly anonymous on any of these platforms here. But I think it is actually incredibly important to have certain places where you can be anonymous. And I think that is the real threat of a policy like this, because there are going to be places where people need to go and talk to people to become safe, to find community, to connect to others who can share their experience, who are not within their normal sphere of influence, can't go meet them down at the library because maybe they don't live close. And so that is a really kind of important thing to think about. So that's where I think there's a real challenge. And it is a governmental thing. It's also a platform thing. We absolutely want people to be safe online. It's really important. But being anonymous online is also important in certain circumstances.
You are listening to Download This Show on ABC Radio National. Ray Johnston here with you, and I'm joined by freelance tech journalist Alice Clark from Press Any Button and ABC Radio Perth content director and games journo with ABC Arts, Gianfranco Di Giovanni. And The Guardian has reported that the NDIS is using machine learning to help draft participant plans for clients. Now, the NDIS is saying that generative AI tools are not being used for decisions that affect people's supports. So how was NDIS or is NDIS using generative AI exactly? What is it being used for, Gianni?
Well, it was supposed to be used, they were using the Microsoft Copilot tool, and it was supposed to be doing emails and meetings and non-client facing tasks, but the FOI sort of came through and it said that that was starting to be used for budget plans for participants. And now this is where I kind of am a little bit like, I don't want to sound pro AI, but a lot of those forms and stuff, if anyone's ever had to fill out a government form, there is a pro forma sort of thing for these standard pieces of information that are going to be applicable to a lot of different people. And things like budget plans and that sort of thing are the sort of things that AI can be quite good at doing. It's replicating stuff and going from that and actually making this information and dropping in, sources of information. We used to call it like a mail merge, basically, where you'd go get a database of things and kind of fill out a letter that way, right? But that is something where an AI can actually automate and can put efficiencies in. The risk is what information it's given in that sort of environment. And the risk we have in particular is that Copilot, and anyone who's opened up Microsoft Office recently, will know that it's really everywhere. And every time you type a bit of text, it says, do you want to rewrite that with AI? No, I'm a journalist. I literally just wrote that bit of text. I'd like to write it myself, please.
So that form filling in process, traditionally that is something, as you've mentioned, has been possible before we had this ready access to generative AI. It doesn't actually require the generative technology to be able to do it. We can just automate it. I feel like there's a lot of rebranding old school automation as something that only generative AI can do. And as we are all aware of, generative AI can be absolutely riddled with errors. It's just not accurate or reliable. Now, the NDIS has been saying that it's using machine learning instead of generative AI. I'm a little bit confused about what's going on here. Alice, how in this context is machine learning different from generative AI in the sense of how is NDIS using machine learning?
It's a great question, Ray.
Million-dollar question.
Machine learning looks at patterns in data and makes calculations based on previous patterns and previous calculations.
Right. So it goes, it's predictive still, though, in a sense.
Kind of. Yes. Yes, it is.
It can
kind
be.
Of. It can, yes. It doesn't have to be, but it can be.
Okay.
So they said that they've been using it to machine learning to generate draft budgets and plans for participants, but that then people are going over that and then the final result is something that a person made. And I can see how in the NDIA, machine learning and I can't believe I'm saying this, generative AI could be useful. Mm. I can see how generative AI would be useful for generating transcripts of meetings for people who are neurodivergent and have hearing problems or impairments. My issue is when it starts being used for things like communications, like emails, and for generating draft plans and budgets.
Or placing a value on something as well.
Yes, because we tend to just implicitly trust a computer when it tells us a number. Like we've spent so long with computers that we go, yes, the one thing that computers are always good at is maths. Until ChatGPT and Copilot kind of ruined that. Ask ChatGPT how many R's there are in strawberry, and you will immediately see how not only did we give computers anxiety, but we also made them bad at maths. I also am concerned because we can't really hold a computer accountable for something. We can't hold it responsible. We can't haul it into a media and say, hey, how did you come up with this? You really shouldn't have done that. That was bad for this reason. Let's get you some new training. We just kind of go, yeah, computer did it. Whereas we could do that with a person. And so if we can't hold a computer accountable, I don't think it should be making any choices or decisions that somebody would need to be held accountable for. It should not be making choices or decisions that can effectively decide how a person's disability is managed, or like, hey, can this person afford to hire someone to come and get them dressed in the morning? Will this person be able to pay for their physical therapy so they might be able to walk again? This is how important the decisions that the NDIA are making. Mm. And that's why I don't, like, we know that ChatGPT and generative AI like that, but we have the research showing that in the best case scenario, it's only wrong 60% of the time.
Yeah.
I don't trust that anywhere near communications they're sent out to people, which they have to rely on. I don't trust that anywhere near something that can determine how a person is able to live their life and how they're able to handle getting treatment for their medical conditions.
Are there security risks involved in this? Are we seeing participants' data fed into a database?
It depends. Yeah, I think it depends. Like, you can actually have local LLMs, local models, which are machine learning that's actually looking at it, and it doesn't leave your network. It is possible to do that and should be like the default. I think having it exposed to the internet and all of those sorts of things is a risk. And I think the example that kind of came to mind immediately is because these things can only, you know, make decisions based on the information that's been fed into it. What if one particular person who had a particular disability, a participant in the NDIS, was found to be doing something improper, right? They were doing what they shouldn't have done. What if it then made a decision based on that, that everyone with that particular disability is more likely to make improper decisions? Yeah. It is very likely that something like that could happen because there's no value judgment between like an AI. It just looks at the stuff and says, that's the information that's in front of me. 100% of the people who have that particular disability have done this thing. And that means the next person, well, 50% of the people do that. So I think it's really risky if you are using it for anything that would put a value on any judgment, and was highlighted, in fact, by the people within the department who actually said, yeah, look, there is a risk that another robo-debt-like situation could potentially happen where just uncontrolled algorithmic decisions were being put out and actually making a big impact, and we could end up with a Royal Commission, and we know that a lot of people lost their lives because of that decision. So this is Absolutely. Really sort of heavy stuff where we need to be very, very careful. There are ways, I think, where you can use this and controlling it and making sure that those sort of things are not making inferences between different data sets and kind of saying, hey, yes, this is this and that is that, but actually being like, okay, we can make five different types of the form and just drop their name and address in. Like, that sort of thing's probably okay. But again, it's got to be really cleverly designed. And I think we're in a world where most of the companies want us to just use it and not think about it too much. And I think that's a dangerous place to be.
You are listening to Download This Show on ABC Radio National. Ray Johnston here with you. And I'm joined by Alice Clark, who is a freelance tech journalist who has the Press Any Button Substack. Subscribe to it. And also Gianfranco Di Giovanni, a games journo with ABC Arts, also ABC Radio Perth content director. And look, conversations around an AI bubble are finally commonplace now. If anyone wants to go back to the Download This Show episode from late last year, I called this is a prediction, not to brag, but look, co-founder and CEO of an AI company called Hugging Face said recently, we're not in an AI bubble. We're just in a large language model bubble. So in the context of this story, let's talk about and define, what is a bubble?
Look, it's basically when something is overvalued because of hype or speculation or fear of missing out. And so money basically gets piled into that particular whatever it is, asset or investment class or anything like that, and it overvalues it. And so when it actually comes to finding the true value of that thing, when profits and losses and all of that sort of stuff comes to bear, it doesn't last, and it pops and basically everything falls apart. We've seen it with gaming investment in 2008 and the global financial crisis and all of these things where, the, you know, as I like to call it, it's just we're in the silly money zone where basically everyone's kind of going a bit wild with their checkbooks. And, you know, I think everyone is looking to get in there, and it's kind of like a gold rush sort of thing where everyone's like, I'm just going to get in. I've got to get in, otherwise I'll miss out. And, you know, that really has been pushing the prices up on a variety of different platforms, but also on a variety of different companies as well.
Yes, sounds very familiar with what's happening right now. So we have. So if a bubble is in some ways defined as an industry that doesn't have the profit needed to recoup the costs of building it, and generative AI has had the most expensive build out in the history of anything ever. If you look at the numbers, it's just absolutely staggering. Where could profits ever come from, Alice?
If I had the answer to that, I would be on like just in my house playing, I don't know, in a giant ball pit. I would be living my best life.
Scrooge McDuck style.
Yeah, exactly. Look, Sam Altman has said that the artificial general intelligence will be able to answer that for us.
Yes.
Unfortunately, he has not worked out how to build that, and has only recently defined it as any AI that makes money. So he's doing great.
Hear that, investors? Well, any AI that makes money, that's the one that I'm building.
There's been an update from Sam Altman and OpenAI on the definition of artificial general intelligence, and that is it will be defined by a panel of experts appointed no later than 2029, I believe. Mm-hmm. Who those panel of experts will be is completely up in the air. I would like representatives from different religious sects all across the world. I think that would be great.
That would be great.
So we have seen tech bubbles in the past, and some of them have left a little residue behind. Yeah, infrastructure that can be used for technologies that are profitable later down the track, sometimes not for a decade though. So I look at data centres, you know, these massive, you know, sometimes the size of Manhattan is the one that Meta is planning to build to train and run generative AI models on, you know, $60,000 GPUs that used to just be used for games, right? Could these data centres be used for something other than generative AI?
Well, we've seen this before. I mean, a lot of these generative AI data centres were once used for Bitcoin mining and NFTs.
I'm seeing a pattern.
Yeah, look, there's going to be the next stupid thing.
Well, I mean, crypto is a good example. Like a lot of the hardware that came out of that was not usable afterwards. Like people would be warning you about buying graphics cards secondhand if they'd been used for mining because they'd just been pushed to the limit. And so it's not like they can even be used again, even though the technology does overlap with some of the other things. The only thing I thought potentially where it might be helpful is, you know, having these big data centers there is sort of doing like maybe doing like visual effects, you know, and you could render these things with those graphics cards that are sitting there now, potentially not talking to. But again,
how many explosions could Michael Bay do with that?
Superpowered Pixar.
You know, Alice, a lot of them. It's really hard to really predict where these things are doing, but we're talking about, massive amounts of land that are being used, massive amounts of power that's being used.
And huge amounts of water.
Wonderful.
Huge amounts of water to keep it all cool.
And then the end result of potentially crashing the stock market and tanking our super. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have on this episode of Download This Show. I'm so sorry to leave you all on that note. Alice Clark, thank you so much. Where can people find you?
Thank you for having me. You can follow me on my Substack, Press Any Button, or on Blue Sky at Alice D. Casey.
And Gianni, where can people find you?
You can find me on abc.net.au, just about everywhere, because I try to write game stories with anyone who will take them. This week, I actually put up a history of the Nintendo Wii,
which
came out this week.
Great story.
Yeah, really cool to kind of look back and actually see, as we're talking about technology that can have an impact down the track, that's one that's had a really big impact down the track despite just being a game console. It's really cool.
Wonderful. And if you listening enjoyed this episode of Download This Show, make sure you follow us on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to leave us a rating and a review where you can and share this episode with a friend that really loves generative AI. I'm Ray Johnston and this is Download This Show on ABC Radio National.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.